And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. Today we're going to get a preview of Friday's Bike to Work Day. Our guests will be John McConaughey and Sarah Bornstein. Rachel Wintz will be giving us an update on Saturday's Girls on the Run. And we're going to be talking to Juno Jazz and Classics performers Paul Rosenthal and Victor Asuncion. We'll also be hearing a report from Gustavus resident Linnea Lenfer. And we're going to be talking with Michelle Kalki and Rebecca Braun about renting the John Cowette Cabin on Twin Lakes. That's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on KTOO News in Juneau.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A rally against racism in front of a hospital in Rapid City, South Dakota, drew a crowd of several hundred people Tuesday. The rally was sparked after a video of a nurse using profanity and racist remarks against Indians was posted on social media. Hospital officials joined rally organizers for reconciliation. Charles Michael Ray has more.
Rapid City Regional Hospital officials fired a nurse on their staff after this profane-laced video was posted to social media. The video was brought to light by those like Cody Hall, who works with the group Last Real Indians. Hall then started a Facebook page titled Fire Rayanne Olivia. He also helped to organize a rally against racism in front of the hospital, where he spoke to the crowd.
This isn't the only time that we're going to get together and do something like this. We're always going to keep pushing the envelope to try and, well, you know what, eradicate racism across the board here. It starts here. It starts with you guys.
The CEO of Regional Health, Brent Phillips, says the nurse was fired 3 hours after he heard about the situation. Phillips then joined with rally organizers in their action against racism.
Hate, bullying, and racism has no place at Regional Health, Rapid City, or South Dakota.
Phillips was joined by hospital president Mick Gibbs, who also spoke to the crowd.
Today we are making history. It starts with the change within our heart, and then it starts with solidarity. So I want to thank you for joining us today in this unification of our vision of creating a community, the Black Hills community, in which racism and bigotry does not exist.
For his part, rally organizer Cody Hall says he's pleased with the outcome of the event. Hall calls on other city leaders to follow the example set by regional health officials and join in local efforts to end racism. I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City.
The state of Washington has created a process to jointly regulate marijuana should any tribes within its borders choose to legalize and sell the drug. Correspondent Tom Bonsi has more from Olympia.
Tribes don't need a state's permission to get into the pot business, but in Washington state, both sides agreed it's best to coordinate. State Senator Ann Rivers says she discovered some tribes are very interested and others not at all in growing or selling marijuana. Rivers stood beside Governor Jay Inslee as he signed a bill allowing his office to enter agreements with tribes about marijuana.
Getting that signed today is just another step to making sure that we have a well-integrated, well-regulated, well-tech system in our state.
Puyallup Tribal Chairman Bill Sterud also attended the signing ceremony. His tribe is among at least half a dozen in the West taking a hard look at the potential of marijuana production and sales. Under the legislation signed by the governor, tribes that choose to participate in Washington State's licensing, distribution, and oversight system would have to collect tribal taxes equivalent to what's charged off-reservation. For National Native News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Olympia, Washington.
Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Wilma Mankiller came in fourth in a national campaign to get a woman on the $20 bill. The grassroots group, Women on 20s, used an online election format for the public to vote on 15 American women in history. Of the more than 600,000 votes, abolitionist Harriet Tubman was picked as the winner, followed by First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt and civil rights advocate Rosa Parks. The organization is urging President Obama to make the change and put a woman's face on U.S. currency. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation.
with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio John McConaughey and Sarah Bornstein. They're both here to talk about Bike to Work Day, which is coming up on Friday of this week. But before we even get to that, I need to know, it's beautiful outside, so who rode to the studio? Oh, there goes one
hand. I'm raising my hand.
Sarah did. Good for you. John, it's okay. Did you walk?
No, I did drive my car.
All right. Well, fair enough. So Friday, we have a big major kind of bike day here in the capital city. And why don't you tell folks about it?
Well, yeah. So John and I are with a group called Juno Rides, and Juno Rides will be organizing a myriad of events all throughout Friday. In the morning, we're going to have three different commuter stations where people can stop by on their way to work and get some refreshments. There will be a stop at Mendenhall Loop Road in Eagan. There will be one at the Twin Lakes Park parking lot and one at the base of the Douglas Bridge right next to the Cycle Alaska shop. And all of those stations will have bike mechanics on hand. If you hear something rubbing or you've got a low air in your tire, it's just a good time to stop and get things checked up.
And this is a Juno event, but it's part of a national program, is that correct?
Yes, so May 15th has been declared as National Bike to Work Day by the League of American Bicyclists, and so cities all over the country are celebrating on Friday.
And do they do the same thing you're doing here in Juneau? They've got all these commuter stations. Is it the same kind of events and activities, or is it different?
A lot of communities do, and in fact, we sort of have modeled a lot of the work that we do at Juneau Rides after stuff that's happening down in Seattle. That's being done by the Cascade Bicycle Club. We're also hosting a challenge that's a month-long bike challenge that's in partnership with the Cascade Bicycle Club. So we're utilizing their platform as a way for people to log trips online and see how many times they can ride their bike in the month of May.
And when you do this, I mean, I realize there's bike lovers everywhere. What's the overall purpose here? Is it just to create bike awareness in communities? Or is there a calling here about why the national organization, local organization say, let's do this?
Well, there's a lot of reasons to get on your bike and ride, and I think it shouldn't be too tough of a sell on a day like today, especially. Bicycling is good for your health. Bicycling is sometimes an easier way to get to point A to point B. It's a lot of fun. It's a good way to see your neighborhood and be more connected to the places that you travel through. It's so much easier for me to stop when I'm riding through my neighborhood and chat with a neighbor than if I were in a car and I had to stick my head out the window. It's good for the environment. It's easier, less wear and tear on our roadway system. So there's a lot of good reasons to ride. And at Juneau Rides, we're not particularly pushing any agenda other than that we hope that everyone try getting on a bike because we love it and we think that you will too.
So I noticed on some of the commuter stations, is that what you call them?
Mm-hmm.
I think one's over by your business, John. Is that correct?
It is. They have a theme to them. Our one was rather famous last year. This is a bacon station.
I was going to ask you about the bacon.
Jack is going to be, I think it's about 7 or 8 pounds of bacon he's going to be cooking up Thursday evening through Friday and for the event. The Twin Lakes one is just, we're going to have bagels there for people, and there'll be some fruit also, coffee at all the stations. And then Pavitt Health and Fitness has got a station out in the valley right at the corner of the Loop Road in Eagan. And Joe's going to have smoothies there for people. And I think he's got some other treats in mind also.
So bacon, tell me more about bacon. How did that get on the menu? Was it just last year, or is this the seventh annual?
No, this is the second year we've actually done the commuter stations. Mm-hmm. And it was an idea I think we pulled from the Cascade Bike Club or the Anchorage.
I think it was Anchorage where they give away bacon.
At one of the stations up there. And we just, it's just sort of counterintuitive in a way, trying to stay fit and eating bacon. But it was just a way of just amplifying perhaps the whole event a little bit, just having a bacon station.
Now, the bacon and the other goodies at the various stations, this is just for bike riders, correct? So if somebody's driving into town, they smell bacon, they can't just pull over.
Good question.
We probably wouldn't slap your hand,
no.
But the idea is to provide it for hungry cyclists that are on their way to work in the morning.
So you've mentioned Juno Rides, the organization. You want to fill the audience in a little bit more about what we talked earlier about freewheelers being one of the biking organizations mm-hmm. in town, and then there's Juno Rides.
Right, this is a group that we got established. Sarah and I are two of about five founding members, and we established ourselves about 2.5 years ago, just recognizing there were some other needs within the community regarding cycling as opposed to races and things like that, which is still an important piece. So some of the initiatives that we have developed is a bike map, which is going into production right now. It should be ready at the end of the month, showing safe ways to bike through the community, whether you're a local or a visitor coming to town. We're doing a program also with JPD called Be Safe, Be Seen, where we've donated 100 sets of lights. When people are riding during the day, they have their lights on during the day, like motorcyclists do, because they saw the reduction in accidents was phenomenal when they started their program for motorcyclists. And Lieutenant Sal out of JPD went to a conference, heard about this, and said, why can't we do this with bikes? So that's sort of a sample of what we're doing. We have some other ideas. We work through the winter mainly because we like to be outside riding through the summer.
I'll testify that I believe riders are much more visible today than they were 5 or 10 years ago. I'm always struck by how well properly dressed they are with bright colors and or the flashing lights. So obviously that's good for everybody involved. So Bike to Work Day is Friday. Obviously it's all over Juno, I'm assuming, right?
We've done our best.
You've done our best. It's all over Juno. You've got these commuter stations in the morning for folks, and then you've got an event at the end of the day.
We do, actually. The brewery has been very gracious, and we're going to have a happy hour at the depot downtown from 4:30 to 7, and actually they're releasing their raspberry wheat beer on that same day, mm-hmm. and there'll be samples of that available to people. There will also be door prizes for the brewery has several. Habits has given some. We'll have some from Cycle Alaska. So we're just giving those out through the evening. But it's just a fun way to finish the day or start your evening, however you like to do it, and come by and just share stories. We're going to show photographs of. We're going to have photographers at all three stations, and then we're going to have to sort of roll that on a loop on a screen there.
So before we go, why don't we just remind folks where the three stations are located for Friday morning?
Sure. So if one happens to be conveniently near either the beginning or the end of your trip, you should stop by. We're at Mendenhall Loop Road in Eagan. At the intersection, we'll be along the grass next to the pathway. We're at the Twin Lakes parking lot, and we are at Cycle Alaska at the base of the Douglas Bridge.
So that's this Friday, Bike to Work Day, a part of the overall month-long kind of bike celebration here in Juneau, and I assume nationwide, correct?
Correct.
Very good. Anything else you guys wanted to say today before we move along?
The weather's supposed to be beautiful on Friday. No excuses.
No
Get
excuses.
On your bike.
There you go.
Pity the fool that doesn't ride on Friday.
I can smell the bacon now. John and Sarah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Saturday morning, dreaming in bed. One little thought runs round my head. Summer is here, it's warm outside. Get my bike and ride, ride, ride. I brush my teeth, I comb my hair. I grab some toast, jump out of my chair. So long, folks, it's time to blow. I jump on my bike and go, go, go. I wanna ride my bike.
bicycle miracle man, making my bicycle jump and dance. Watch me win the Tour de France, down the back street, round the pond. Bet I'm faster than Greg LeMond. It's so great to be outside. What I like is to ride, ride, ride. I'm gonna ride my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike. Strawberry Hill, we have races, we have fun. We go fast as a horse can run. Every Saturday, what I like is getting outside and riding my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike all around the world. I'm gonna ride my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike. I'm gonna ride my bike all around.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Rachel Wintz. She is the coordinator of the Girls on the Run program. There's a 5K run coming up this weekend, Saturday, May 16th. So we'll talk a little bit about the run itself. But welcome to the studios, Rachel.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Hi. And Girls on the Run, why don't we just start with letting folks know what the program is.
So Girls on the Run is an empowerment program for girls in the 3rd through 8th grade, and it's a 12-week, 24-lesson program where we teach girls lessons about body image, resisting peer pressure, making healthy decisions, and contributing to the community, and we do that through running. So over this 12-week period, they play running games to learn these lessons, and then at the end, we have a 5K to celebrate their accomplishments throughout the season.
And that's what's coming up on Saturday.
Yep, this Saturday.
So this program, there's a lot of layers, a lot of positive layers to what you just described. This started, how long has this been around? Did it start somewhere else and Juno's now like a member of the program?
Yes, so Girls on the Run started around 1998, I believe, in Charlotte, North Carolina. And since then, it's grown to over 225 different councils across the U.S. and in Canada. And we started a chapter here in Juneau in 2007, and it immediately took off. People loved the program, and we expanded the program to Southeast Alaska in partnership with the domestic violence agencies in Sitka and Ketchikan. So we've recently been asked by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to expand the program across the state, which is very exciting. So we're going to partner with some domestic violence agencies, both in Fairbanks and Cordova, to bring Girls on the Run to girls all across Alaska.
And is AWARE the major kind of sponsor? Or describe the relationship with AWARE.
Yes, so AWARE is the affiliated agency with Girls on the Run International, and we use this program as a program to prevent violence in our community. So these topics that the program touches upon kind of build up protective factor in girls that makes them less likely to experience intimate partner violence in the future. So we're partnering with domestic violence agencies across the state to bring it to a wider audience.
The running aspect, we all know that running is a good form of exercise and there's a lot of benefits that go along with running. Do you have a feel for how running or why running was kind of selected way back when as maybe a focal point for all of these other beneficial kind of lessons and teachings that go along with the program?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not only does it bring kind of this concept of health into their lives, but the girls also learn that if they set a goal, which is the 5K, and they practice to achieve it, then they can do it. And it teaches them that they can achieve anything.
So a prospective participant in the program, maybe they think they hear about running and they go, oh, I'm not a runner, I don't want to run. But, you know, so how much of the you mentioned the 24 lessons or however the curriculum is set up. I'm assuming it's not all running, that they're doing a variety of things. Maybe can you shed a little light on for a prospective participant, the kinds of things that you would participate in over the course of the 24 lessons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we start out the lesson by learning about a specific topic for the day, like resisting peer pressure or something like that, and just kind of chat about general questions about the topic. And then we do a little bit of a warm-up. So we usually do like a relay or something fun to get the girls moving and get them engaged with their team. And then there's usually some sort of lesson involved in that relay. And then we do kind of stretching and processing the relay, ask some more questions. And then we do a workout time. And the workout time will also involve things that have to do with the topic that we introduced initially. So it's a lot of fun. It has a lot of moving around and meeting new people and just enjoying yourself and having a positive outlook on life.
Age range here?
There's third through fifth grade has a program, and then sixth through eighth grade has another program as well.
And a time commitment for somebody who signed up for the spring program, which is culminating with the 5K, what kind of, you know, getting it squeezed into their busy lives and everything, what kind of time commitments involved?
Mm-hmm. It's after school twice a week, and it's about an hour and a half each day. So it's about 3 hours per week.
And do you get kids who sign up who have never run in,
mm-hmm.
in a sense?
Definitely, yeah. You don't have to be a runner to be involved with the program, to participate in it, or to coach it as well. We have wonderful volunteer coaches from across the city that help to put on this program, and they're an inspiration to the girls. And definitely, you don't have to love running to love the program. It's really great to see even the girls who come in kind of dragging their feet at the beginning of the season, once they get a taste of what the program is, they end up just loving it and they blossom throughout the season. It's great to see that evolution.
The coaches, I assume they're volunteers. Are they community volunteers?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. And if somebody's interested in as a potential coach, how would they get involved?
Mm-hmm. They can contact AWARE. You can contact Rachel at AWARE if you'd like. Our phone number at the prevention office is 586-4902, and we've got all the information for you if you like.
Okay, so now we've got a feel for the program itself. So Saturday is a big day for these kids.
Yep.
Why don't you tell the community about what's going to happen on Saturday?
It is. So the end of the program culminates with a 5K event, and it's a celebration of all the work that the girls have put in over the season. And we make it really fun for the girls. We have face paint, and we decorate their hair, and we play lots of games when they get there. And so it starts at 10 a.m. with all the fun and festivities, and then at 11 o'clock we'll start the race. And it's not your traditional 5K. This is non-competitive, non-timed, and girls can walk, skip, hop, jump, or run as long as they're moving forward.
And located where is the 5K?
Mm-hmm. It'll be at Sandy Beach this Saturday, May 16th, starting at 10 a.m.
And this is a run that's open to the community?
Yes, anyone can join us. And if you're interested in learning more about the program or getting involved, you're welcome to come and volunteer. We have several different booths around that girls come, like the face painting and hairspraying, and we'd love to have volunteers help out with that. So if you're interested, you can contact Rachel at AWARE at 586-4902.
And how many kids are in the spring program that are going to be, you call it graduating? What do you call it
mm-hmm.
when they do the 5K run? It's some kind of...
There'll be about 80 girls there, and it's just a celebration.
So this is 80 girls that are in the program this mm-hmm. spring, spread out across the different grades and age
yep.
groups.
Yeah, third through eighth grade.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. great. I read on the website or somewhere that there's also a fall season, or typically there is a fall season. I realize that may be, you know, you may be working on that now, but just so for families or girls who maybe missed out on the opportunity this spring, there will be another opportunity, or you hope there will be another opportunity.
Girls on Run has two seasons throughout the year. One is in the spring, which is February through May, and the second is in the fall, which is September through December, so we go with the school calendar. And girls can repeat the program as many times as they'd like. We never turn girls away if they wanted to do it again. We're excited to have them.
And I apologize if you mentioned this early on in the interview, but how many years has this been going on in Juneau?
Since 2007, mm-hmm. So about 8 years now.
And I'm assuming each year there's a few more kids participating,
yeah.
That it probably the Definitely. Attendance has gone up.
Yes, over the years we've served 1,085 girls.
Wow.
And about 40% of them have repeated the program again. So it really shows how much of an impact it makes in the girls' lives. Girls on the Run International is also reaching a kind of landmark this year in that they're serving their 1 millionth girl across the U.S. and Canada. So we're very excited to celebrate this as well at the 5K.
Well, sounds like a very successful program for many good reasons. So congratulations on that. I think we can touch on the details of the event coming up one more time, but were there a few other things, anything else you wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to say?
I'd definitely like to thank our sponsors for the event and for the program. Those include Valley Medical, Glacier Pediatrics, Rainforest Pediatrics, Jan Caulfield Consulting, the City Borough of Juneau Youth Activities Grant, and the Juneau Community Foundation Blue Heron Fund. Those all fund the program, which make it so successful. And then we've had some donations for the 5K as well from Breeze Inn, Safeway, Heritage Coffee, and Super Bear. And Foggy Mountain Shop is sponsoring our Coach of the Season. So we're very thankful to all our sponsors for helping us put on this program and this wonderful 5K event.
And in this town, rain or shine, these things happen, but it looks like you might get some shine or at least some dry weather. So a wonderful opportunity for people to come out and support these young women on Saturday. So it's 10 o'clock.
Yep. The 5K is 10 a.m. this Saturday, May 16th at Sandy Beach.
Very good. Rachel Wentz, who is the coordinator of Girls on the Run here in Juneau, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 13th of May, 2015. It's the birthday of the satirist Stephen Colbert, born in Washington, D.C., 1964, the youngest of 11 kids. He lost his father and two of his brothers in a plane crash when he was 10 years old, retreated into books and later the theater. It's the birthday of the poet Kathleen Jamie, born in Renfrewshire, Scotland, 1962, who said, "When we were young, we were told that poetry is about voice, about finding a voice and speaking with this voice. But the older I get, I think it's not about voice. It's about listening and the art of listening with attention." It was on this day in 1940 Winston Churchill gave his first speech as Prime Minister to the House of Commons. He'd taken over the job 3 days before. Britain was at war with Germany. The prospects were not good. Churchill was 65 years old, and he stood up in Commons, and he said, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our policy? I can say it is to wage war by sea, land, and air with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us, to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalog of human crime." It's the birthday of the novelist Daphne du Maurier, born in London, 1907, She married. She was in Egypt where her husband was stationed, and she found that she was brooding over her jealousy of his first fiancé, a woman named Jan Ricardo, who had committed suicide. And that became the gist of her novel Rebecca, which became a big bestseller in 1938 and earned enough money for Daphne du Maurier to buy a castle for herself in Cornwall and to live there. Here's a poem for today by George Bilgear entitled You Asked For It. There was a show on TV called You Asked For It. Viewers would write in and ask to see unusual things, such as the world's greatest slingshot expert. I watched it every week on our humble Motorola, although the only episode I can remember now is the one about the slingshot expert. He was a grown man, as I recall, and he lived in an ordinary place, like New Jersey. At a distance of 10 or 20 paces, he could pulverize one marble with another. He could hit a silver dollar tossed into the air. He was the kind of father I wanted to have, an expert shot, never missing. And I think of him now, perhaps long dead, or frail and gray, his gift forgotten, just another old guy on a park bench in Fort Lauderdale, fretting about Medicare, grateful for the sun on his back, his slingshot, useless in this new world. You Asked For It, a poem by George Bilgear, used by permission of the poet here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by LegalZoom, for over 10 years, providing legal solutions for business owners, families, and individuals, including incorporation, LLCs, wills, and living trusts. LegalZoom.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hi, I'm Carlos Boozer. As an athlete, I had the blessing of having lots of great male role models. My father, my teachers, my coaches all encouraged me and taught me the fundamentals of the game, the same way I try to teach young people now. But as an Alaskan, I realized there's another more important skill I can model for young boys. It's respect. There's no place for violence against women in our state.
Together we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/cdvsa.
And up next on the Juno Afternoon, we're going to talk about another incredible performance here that the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival has lined up in their 29th season of putting the festival together here in the capital city. I have in the studio Victor Asuncion, who is a pianist. We were hoping to have Paul Rosenthal here as well, violinist. We're not sure if Paul's going to be able to make it, so Victor's going to handle the interview here. But first off, welcome to KTOO and welcome to Juneau, Alaska.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're welcome. Have you been to Alaska
this
before?
This is actually my first time.
First time. So
yeah.
First time in Juneau.
Yeah.
So how did you get connected to the festival?
I've been playing with Evan Brachman for 16 years now, and he has always talked about Alaska because it's such a special place for him. And he told me about Linda and Paul Rosenthal, and somehow the schedules could never line up, and this year it finally did. So I'm here.
And you've been busy.
Yeah, I hit the ground running. I got here on Monday night, and by the following day, I think I had 3 or 4 events to do and several concerts, including a special trip to Tenneke Springs, which was very memorable.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Did you go over on the ferry or did you fly over?
We flew.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was an experience For sure.
And was that just to see some of Alaska, or did you actually perform there?
Yeah, we performed there on Friday night.
Wow.
For about, someone told me that their population was 75 and about 73 people came. So that's the best audience that I've ever had, you know, percentage-wise.
Was that just a day trip, or did you spend the night?
We spent the night there.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, excellent.
Well, I've always heard, I mean, part of the draw here is exactly that you come to Alaska, and it's amazing how often the weather cooperates this time of year for the festival.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable.
So you hear from musicians who get to go do these amazing Alaskan
right,
things.
Right, yeah, fringe benefits, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow night,
yes,
correct? Thursday night, yes. Mm-hmm. Thursday night at 7 o'clock, you are in recital with
yes.
Paul Rosenthal.
Yes.
This will be at 7 o'clock, mm-hmm. Chapel by the Lake, beautiful Chapel by the Lake.
That's
one of
heard.
The many beautiful venues that yeah. you get to see here in Juneau. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the recital for folks who come tomorrow?
Well, in the first half, I'm collaborating with Paul. We are playing a masterpiece by Claude Franck. Oh, no, sorry, César Franck. And it's a four-movement work for piano and violin, and it's one of the war horses of the violin and piano repertoire. And it's quite recognizable. It's very, very easy to listen to, sort of late romantic style. And the themes, he recycles them throughout the four movements. So you will hear, you know, snippets of themes that keep coming back. And by the end of it, you'll probably be whistling mm-hmm. the main tunes. It's a very catchy piece. And it's very enjoyable to play, and also incredibly difficult. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And then in the second half, I'm playing solo stuff. I start with Schumann's Carnival, Opus 9. It's Schumann's Homa Akle. It's kind of like his little diary of characters that he himself had in his head because he was, you know, he had some mental disorders. And he also writes, you know, music that depicts his friends, like, for example, Chopin and Paganini. And, of course, his great love, Clara, is depicted in the piece. In fact, she's musically all over the piece. It's about, I guess I would say, about 30 minutes long. And then I end with two Liszt transcriptions, operatic transcriptions. And the first one is really, really close to my heart. It's from Tristan und Isolde. It's the Liebestod, which literally translates the love death. It's the aria that Isolde sings as Tristan lays dying next to her. And it's actually quite poignant, and I think a masterpiece, you know, when it comes to Liszt's transcriptions. You know, Liszt always got a bad rap because, you know, people think he's all flash. But in terms of transcriptions, this is actually as serious and as faithful he ever came to you know, basically transcribing any piece of music. It's about 6 to 7 minutes long. You know, of course, it's opera. And in opera, when someone's dying, because Isolde herself is dying, you know, people have 6 minutes to sing. So, and the last piece in the program is from Gounod's Faust. And it's basically three different scenes where Faust meets Mephistopheles, the devil, and then his romance with Marguerite in the middle section, and then at the very end when he, you know, sells his soul to the devil and then, you know, goes down in flames. And it's a very bombastic and also very, very catchy theme. I remember hearing this, the waltz theme, when I was, I don't know, 12 years old, and and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I finally found it a few years later, and I was like, wow, this is an absolutely amazing transcription. It's so much fun to play. But again, it has so much depth in it. You know, it's not just like a show-off piece, although it does that.
And this will be your last performance in the
it
festival.
It is, actually, yeah.
And then do you right away hop on a plane and go off somewhere else?
I have a few performances in Chicago, mm-hmm. Which is my home base. And then I go to New York City for – I'm doing a taping for a CBS documentary on the great cellist Lynn Harrell, who I happen to be playing with since 1999. And then I go to Russia for the Tchaikovsky competition. I'm playing for – an American competitor. He's a cellist. He's a wonderful cellist. And then I go to South America for the month of July. And then in August, I'm doing music in the Valley and Napa Valley. And also there's the Highland Cashiers Chamber Music Festival in North Carolina. So it's I'm basically on the road for the entire summer.
I think time for just one question here.
Mm-hmm.
So the collaboration with Paul,
yeah.
How does that work? I mean, are you collaborating before you even get here, or do you get here and you guys just go practice? And is that, I'm curious.
To be honest with you, we actually haven't rehearsed it yet. Yeah.
Awesome.
So it's, I mean, I've played it maybe 100 times. I'm sure he's played it over 100 times.
Right.
We know each other's parts, and basically, you know, there are moments when I lead, there are moments when he leads and I follow, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's the nature, like the true spirit of collaboration.
Yeah.
I mean, he and I played a piano trio with Evan, and we had a few rehearsals because Evan is fond of rehearsing,
yeah.
And Paul and I,
yeah.
We just want to, you know, leave some things to chance, you know, and kind of like just throw caution to the wind and just enjoy the moment, so... I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds great. So this will be Paul Rosenthal and Victor Asuncion in recital, violin and piano. That's coming up tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock, Chapel by the Lake UAS campus as part of the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. Victor, thank you for coming to Juno and for performing for so many people here in the Capital City.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And up next on a Juno afternoon, we've got a special... special little report here. 11-year-old Gustavus resident Linnea Lentfer was invited to attend the Alaska Press Club conference in Anchorage last month, where she shared an audio story to journalists and reporters from around the state. Linnea is part of the University of Alaska Anchorage Equinox program, which encourages youth in rural communities to tell stories through different forms of digital media. Here's Linnea's story about her daily sound journey to school.
This is Linnea Lentfer in Gustavus, Alaska. I'm 11 years old, and for the last 6 years, I've been riding my bike to school. This morning, the meadow squishes under my boots, muddy from last night's rain. This isn't so unusual for the spring equinox, but this winter we've had more squishy days than snowy ones, and the songbirds have started up early. My bike lives in a shed crowded with the various bits and pieces of the contraptions I've ridden to school over the years. In kindergarten, I pedaled a trailer bike attached to one of my parents' seat posts. First grade came along, and I rode a quadricycle, two bikes hooked together with steel bars so my parents could help me get to school. In second grade, my father built me a quinticycle. Two adult-sized tricycles hooked together with my mother atop the front one. It was a brilliant contraption and could travel on snow and ice. It even had a little seat for my friend Iris so we could take her to school. Every year, the route I've taken has been the same. I ride down our path, past the windy creek and then onto the dirt road over the culvert. Some sounds I hear all year round. Like this raven. and the gurgle bubble of the water in the creek. There's sounds that I only hear in the winter, like this magpie. And as the magpie fades away, we start hearing the varied thrush and the junco. But by the time school gets out, we have the full blast of spring songbirds. So many, you can hardly distinguish one call from another. My favorite sound, though, happens in the fall. The migrating sandhill cranes. The dirt road near our home is lined with cottonwood trees. In March, they are dead and barren, but in a few weeks they'll start budding out, and soon the whole town will be filled with their perfume. Next year, when I start school, my father and I will play one of our favorite games, pedaling, trying to catch the leaves before they hit the ground. As I come out of the tunnel of cottonwood trees, I'm almost to my favorite part of the bike ride, crossing the bridge over the Salmon River, right into the open meadows in the center of town. Here, I never know what I'm going to see. Maybe I'll be treated to golden eyes, the wind whistling in their wings as they take off. Some mornings, clear and cold, I see the ice cracking and popping with the rising tide. Or maybe the light of the low winter sun, shining in the mist rising from the mountains' reflections in the river. Sometimes, just sometimes, I'm treated to swans. There's not much traffic in our little town in the morning. Only the parents of my classmates driving their kids to school. Whenever one of the cars passes me, though, even when the rain is blowing sideways and the wind pushes me across the road, I'm glad I'm a biker. All the sounds that I'm able to hear and the details I'm able to observe could never penetrate the car's windows. As I pull into school and walk towards the gleeful squeals of my classmates on the playground, I think about all the things I'm able to learn even before I step through the doors of the school.
Support for programming comes from the Capital City Weekly, focused on arts, culture, and entertainment in Southeast Alaska, with distribution at community retailers throughout the region. Information at capitalcityweekly.com.
That was 11-year-old Linnea Lentfer from Gustavus, and she was talking about her bike ride to school. Linnea participated in UAA's Equinox Project, which shares digital stories from rural Alaska. Congratulations, Linnea. That was outstanding. Well, I'd like to welcome into the studio Rebecca Braun and Michelle Kalki. Good to see you both here. And you guys are here to talk about the John Coet Cabin, which is located at Twin Lakes. And why don't we just start with that? What's going on with the cabin?
Well, I'll start. This is Becca. And the cabin was built in honor of my late husband, John Coet, whom many, many people in Juneau came to know through his many, many activities. He died in October 2010 in an accident, and right away there was a real interest among his friends and family in doing something meaningful to honor John's legacy. He just loved sports, recreation, family time, community, all of it wrapped up in one, and he really loved playing hockey, and he especially loved playing pond hockey, like real pond hockey on an actual outdoor frozen lake. And I think what he loved about it was like that it was always unplanned and spontaneous. And I think he loved being able to skip work for 3 hours on a sunny winter day because it was so rare. You just had to. Right away, there was kind of this idea among some of his friends to build sort of a warming shelter to help support basically family recreation, outdoor recreation in a really accessible way and make it at Twin Lakes. So that was sort of the initial idea. I'll let Michelle talk a little more.
Well, as you know, you drive by Twin Lakes, and there's a beautiful yellow cedar cabin on the south end of the shores. And it's been put to use the last couple winters as a warming hut. And just recently, last year, we went into agreement with the city. And the city does own the property and does own the cabin. And they manage it with us. In the summertime, the city rents it out. And so it just basically went online this past month to allow people, the public, to rent it out as a facility, a shelter facility. So that's what we wanted to be here today to help, you know, bring awareness to the use of the cabin and get people to enjoy this beautiful facility. It's a great summertime rental place. I've used it a couple times for my birthday party and going to do it again this month. So we can give you some more information, the details.
Is this new that it's being offered in the summer?
Yeah, this is the first year. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole process took a long time. The cabin, the structure was built entirely with donated labor, used some of the donated money to buy a few things that we needed to buy. But it was really, truly a labor of love, an incredible testament to this community. And so we want to see it used as much as possible, help create great memories for people. That's really what it's all about. So it'll be more accessible this way when people can use it in the summer. It's on the city's rental for basically their standard rate of $25 an hour plus tax, which is a great deal. And that money will also help ensure that we can keep up the maintenance and operations on the cabin.
Well, I know that cabins are not always that accessible here in the Juneau area. Oftentimes they're not on the road system. So actually this is kind of a remarkable opportunity in that sense. So summertime, here's a cabin that's actually very accessible.
Yeah, it is rare. We should clarify that it's for day use, which is 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. that it's rentable. It's unfortunately not rentable overnight.
But it's right there at Twin Lakes, yeah. And I would think in particular for families with kids, I mean, this could be a really comfortable and easy way to spend the day, whatever kind of event it is, but and also just having access to the playground there and the, you know, the lake itself.
Yeah, it was built with a very sunny aspect and a big deck that's super sunny when it's sunny. But then, of course, if it's rainy, you have a nice place to retreat to, and it does have electricity and heat, and some of our friends spruced up the interior recently, and it's got this nice kind of table, and it has electricity, and we had a couple times this winter when people brought crock pots and plugged them all in, and it worked really well for potlucks like that.
I bet there's a significant part of the community that hasn't discovered the cabin yet. I mean, if not everybody's ice skating on the pond, you know, so great opportunity for people to learn about this cabin. So it's right there in the parking lot, right? Right off the parking lot?
Yeah, you just can park right there in the parking lot and bring whatever you need down to the cabin. And as Becca was describing, there's a large table in there and there's benches in there. It's really comfortable, probably for, I'd say, a gathering. You know, on a great sunny day, you can have as many people as you want in and out of the cabin. But if it's raining, probably inside the cabin would probably fit comfortably, you know, 15 to 20 people. We put a lot of kids and families in there in the wintertime with hockey bags and crock pots, and it's a lot of fun to be gathered in there. And, again, it's a beautiful view. You have the... you know, the Chilkat Range, you're looking at that, and it's perfectly angled for really nice summer sunsets.
We're talking about the John Coet Cabin located at Twin Lakes and the fact that it's now open for rentals, and you can do that through CBJ.
Mm-hmm.
before we got on the microphone here, though, we talked a little bit about the fall season coming up and maybe some other activities or things to think about in terms of this cabin. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure. So last winter when, you know, the group of us who were kind of the organizers of it, we'd open up the cabin as the warming hut. And instantly, you know, the word got out and we had potlucks and crock pots happening and little barbecues happening out right on the ice. We had little mini hockey tournaments. This winter, when the city is done managing it and renting it out for the summer, we'll take over the management of it. We'll decide if we won't be charging a particular fee, but we might be asking for donations if people want to rent it out. But we'll have hockey events. We'll have, you know, hockey skating events there, and just kind of the hockey and rink community gathering outside when we do actually have some really good outdoor ice.
Yeah, tough year.
last winter was really tough, but when we had the outdoor ice, we definitely took advantage of it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And to clarify about where it's located, because there are various structures around Twin Lakes, it's the south end, that is, you know, the hospital end, and it's by the dock, if people know that little dock. So it's a great spot and very sunny.
I know. I looked online and saw the Juno Empire's photo gallery of it being built, and it's pretty... pretty wonderful story there of the community turning out on behalf of John and building it. And I can only imagine that it's continued to make people feel really good, which is what John was known for.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. It's really true. And it's kind of phenomenal. I think of it as a way of, like, his spirit propagating. John was very generous and very community-minded, and he would always he'd be the guy kind of bringing crates and making sure he helped parents get their kids' skates on, and he taught lots of kids in this town to skate if their parents were uncertain about it, and he'd bring skate aids. And so many people worked on this cabin, some people who knew him, some who didn't, who were just inspired. I mean, I remember a story, one a horrible rainy day when there were a few people out doing some of the landscaping, and some guy biking by said, "What's going on?" And he was touring and visiting from England, and when they told him the story, he said, "I'll help," and spent a few hours working on it. So I just, that kind of warmed my heart. And on a personal note, my kids were 8 and 2 when they lost their dad, and this cabin means so much to them, and it's really for them a physical touchstone and an ongoing connection and a source of pride for them to know that their dad was special and that his spirit lives on and inspires others.
Indeed it does. The John Coet Cabin, located at Twin Lakes, available now for rental through CBJ. And just go to the website, is that
Yeah,
pretty
even
much?
I just, like, I Googled it today. It's the CBJ, you know, Twin Lakes Cabin or CBJ Parks and Rec. You can find it under their shelter reservation, and you can fax that in, and I know I've rented it a couple times already for this summer. I think it's very available. There's not a lot of time slots taken, so we hope to see a lot of use out of it this summer. And then we'll come back this fall and winter, and we'll talk to you more about our winter hockey plans and gatherings as a warming hut as we get more outdoor ice.
Rebecca, any closing thoughts?
That's it. Just go out and have fun and do goofy things. Turn off your electronics. Go enjoy all the beautiful things this city has to offer. And you know, I do want to just quickly thank a few people or a few general entities. But the Juno Community Foundation was really integral. They house the John Coet Memorial Fund, and that was sort of the vehicle through which we funded this effort. And I want to note that if people do want to contribute, it's absolutely welcome, contributions of any size. But the Juno Community Foundation, you can go to their website and just donate to the Coet Memorial Fund. And we're also really grateful to the city for going kind of above and beyond to work with us on this project and help make this available.
Rebecca Braun, Michelle Kalki, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.5.